From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
I'm Robert Siegel, and this is from a new documentary called Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room.
The other thing about people at Enron is a lot of them were former nerds, including Jeff Skilling.
He had been paunchy, he had big glasses, he losing his hair, and Jeff Skilling one day kind of woke up and decided to change himself. And he started working out, lost a lot of weight, but he really did remake himself through sheer will and force of personality.
When Jeff got LASIK on his eyes, everybody at Enron got LASIK, so nobody was wearing glasses.
The film is based on the book, The Smartest Guys in the Room, The Amazing Rise and Scandalous Fall of Enron, by journalists Bethany McLean and Peter Elkind. It is a documentary film that is about greed, arrogance, gullibility, complicity. Producer Alex Gibney joins us. Have I left out any sins that this is about?
No. There are probably a few more, but I think you got the big ones.
The title of the documentary and the book it's drawn from tells us a lot about this, The Smartest Guys. And in part, this is the story of the blinding potential of brain power. People can make you think it doesn't matter that you don't understand what I'm doing because I'm smarter than you.
That's right. And the executives at Enron used that very effectively. They would always say to people, "You just don't get it. I know what's going on. It's very complicated. It would take me too much time to explain it to you. You'll just have to accept the fact that you're not as smart as I am."
As you understand the story of Enron, at what point does it change from a company whose leaders do think they're really on to a new way of doing things, new kinds of markets, new forms of trading, to a company that understands it's a house of cards and it's trying to stave off the wolves?
It's interesting about Enron. It's important to understand Enron that early on, they didn't start out to run a scam. I think they felt they were doing something very new. It was part of the new economy, which was part of the bubble economy. And they had this vision that you could trade natural gas and ultimately electricity, just like stocks and bonds. And that was a revolutionary idea that still carries on today and had a lot of value to it. But where they got in trouble was they projected value for the company that ultimately the company never lived up to, in effect. And so there was a huge gap between the cash that was coming in the door and the stated profits that they were telling everybody they were making.
And they actually had approval, I believe, from the Securities and Exchange Commission to use a method of accounting. Those of us who have done our taxes very recently know this is not cash, it's not accrual, it's something unto itself.
It was called mark-to-market accounting. And mark-to-market accounting in some context is very conservative. If you have a portfolio of stocks, you want it always to be mark-to-market. So whatever the market value is, that's how it's marked. But in the energy industry, ultimately, they would have a contract that would be, say, a 10-year contract to deliver natural gas. They'd put a value on it, and they'd book that profit the very first day that the contract was signed. Well, over time, that created a big problem because you start having those big profits, but the cash isn't coming in the door. It looks good to the outside world, and investors want to invest, but you have a real cash problem.
One of my favorite moments in the documentary is a joke that the people in Enron made about themselves.
"This is the key. We're going to move from mark-to-market accounting to something I call HFV. Hypothetical future value accounting.
Whoa!
If we do that, we can add a gazillion dollars to the bottom line."
"Whoa, Jeff! All right, that sounds fantastic. Oh, Jeff, thank you. That's just superb performance. And you're going to go far, my boy. Probably president of the company one day."
"You think so?"
"I think."
This is the kind of funny video that's produced for a corporate conference, which they're making a joke about mark-to-market accounting.
They do. Jeff Skilling, in a skit, they used to do a lot of skits at Enron, and they would videotape them. The Department of Justice has most of them now, but we found one. But it's a joke that has a certain kernel of truth to it. And so a lot of what they did at Enron, they in fact later on produced a skit in which Jeff Skilling is led away in handcuffs. That's under wraps still. But, you know, the skits had a fair amount of truth to them at Enron.
As a documentary filmmaker, you were assisted by the existence of a lot of film or video and audio that came courtesy of Enron itself.
Well, the audio tapes, I think, are the most inflammatory materials that we were able to include. We have audio tapes of Enron traders literally bringing down the state of California for their own private gain. And it wasn't just Enron. It was a lot of other companies, too. But in one example, we have people, one Enron trader calling a power plant and asking the power plant to shut down, which the power plant gleefully does. And they shut down so they can drive prices up so they can make more money. It's really shocking stuff.
Given the wealth of primary sources, those audio tapes, the videos that Enron made, I want to ask you, as a documentary filmmaker, whether you have any second thoughts at all about, say, the dramatization of an Enron executive taking his own life. We know that that's a fiction device you're using in this story. So much of it is so real and so well documented. How do you reconcile using the fiction technique in a documentary that's striving to be taken absolutely seriously?
Well, it becomes a very tricky problem, because even when you use archival footage, traditionally you'll use a piece of footage for World War II, for example. You don't know if it was taken at the Battle of the Bulge or at D-Day. There's a bond of trust, ultimately, between the filmmaker and the audience. And you have to lay out the rules for the audience early on. This is an authored piece. This is not a straightforward
This isn't Edward R. Murrow.
That's correct.
The story
so that it's our take, and yet at the same time, we were very careful to be factually accurate.
Do you think the Enron story is going to survive as a cautionary tale of American business life or political life?
I think Enron will survive as a cautionary tale because it goes way beyond Enron. As one person says in the film, it was a story of synergistic corruption. Not only Enron, but with the investment banks, people like J.P. Morgan Chase, Merrill Lynch, Arthur Andersen, the accounting firm that has now fallen, Vincent and Elkins, Enron's law firm, and even the politicians who failed to properly regulate what was going on. So in that sense, Enron is a kind of inside view into our financial system, which is rigged in a certain sense for the high and mighty in ways that I think is not good for our democracy.
Alex Gibney, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Robert.
Producer Alex Gibney wrote and directed the documentary Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room. It opens in Houston and New York tomorrow.